Hey everyone, episode 61 here. And I got some bad news. Well, there's bad news and there's bad news. The bad news is you are listening to a podcast about the Bible. Now that's the bad news. But the bad news is that this reading is particularly boring. Not really anything happens, but there's a little bit, so we'll try to do what we can. You know, that's what I do. So, but we're also, but the bad news is we're finishing Judges. I'll call that the mediocre news. So we're at like bad news, mediocre news. And then a fourth bad news, which is we're starting the book of Ruth, which is the weirdest. It's four chapters. So it'll be over next podcast. But it's just so far, just nothing happens. So that's the bad news. So bad news, mediocre news, bad news. There's almost never good news in this podcast, except when we finish, I guess. Except that one time Moses died, or Joshua, or whoever it was. Probably Moses. God, I hate that guy. All right, so Judges chapter 20. Then all the children of Israel went out, and the congregation was gathered together as one man, from Dan even to Beersheba, with the land of Gilead, unto the Lord in Mizpeh. And the chief of all the people, even of all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 footmen that drew sword. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel were gone up to Mizpeh. And then said the children of Israel, "Tell us, how was this wickedness?" And then the Levite, the husband of the woman who was slain, answered and said, "I came into Gibeah that belongeth to Benjamin, I and my concubine, to lodge. And the men of Gibeah rose against me and beset the house round about upon me by night, and thought to have slain me. And then my concubine, they have forced that she is dead." Okay, that's not exactly how I remember it. You know, I don't think it's a pretty flattering version of that story. If you recall, what actually happened was that they surrounded the house, but it didn't seem like they were able to break in, because then they would have just done that and not bothered with all these demands and stuff. But after demanding him, the guy said, you know, the host said, "No, but here, we'll give you these women." And then after these savages of Gibeah refused the women, the husband said, like, "No, really, you want this woman, trust me." And he forced her out of the door, essentially, and locked it behind her. And then they just raped her to death. And he got a good night's sleep. And then he woke up and was like, "Oh, what's this dead girl on my doorstep?" So that's not exactly the same as how he presented it. You know, he said, "Oh, hey, rose against me, and man, they were gonna kill me, but they got my concubine, and she's dead." And then the man that he's telling this to probably said, like, "Oh man!" And then they cut her all up, right, into a bunch of pieces. And he's like, "Oh no, that was me actually. I just thought it would be faster than sending her entire body around to all the 12 tribes. Well, and to save on postage, you know, because rather than sending one heavy package all around, I figure send 12 small light packages at one time, you know." The men must have been like, "Oh, you did that? Holy shit, are you serious? That's really messed up. So that was your concubine and you carved her up like that? Why didn't you tell us that? You didn't include that in the note you sent, because that's a bit different than, you know, because we were all under the perception that they murdered her, raped her, and cut her all up, you know, and I mean, it's bad. I understand they killed her, but you did the cutting up, huh? That changes my idea of what happened by a little bit." You know, I'm sure that was the next thing. "And I took my concubine and cut her in pieces and sent her throughout all the country of the inheritance of Israel, for they have committed lewdness and folly in Israel." Oh, okay. I guess he's not trying to hide that fact. He's proudly, Yeah, then I, he's telling it like it's a normal thing. Yeah, and then I cut her up, obviously, and sent her out, you know, different parts to different places. Yeah, so that's disgusting. And it, for they have committed lewdness and folly. So that's the way to fix that. You know, when someone commits lewdness, chop up your own wife, well, one of your wives, and send pieces of her around. That's just how it works. We all know that. Behold, ye are all children of Israel. Give here your advice and counsel. He must have said, well, get some therapy would probably be the first place I'd go. not that you're ever seeing the light of day again. And all the people arose as one man, saying, we will not any of us go to his tent, neither will we any of us turn into his house. But now this shall be the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up by lot against it, and we will take 10 men of 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, and 100 of 1,000, and 1,000 of... yeah, okay, 10%, we get it. To fetch... wait, is that 10%? I wasn't paying attention. Yeah, 10 of 100. to fetch victual for the people, that they may do when they come to Gibeah of Benjamin, according to all the folly that they have wrought in Israel. So all the men, so apparently he convinced them and they're all outraged by this. So all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, knit together as one man. It sounds kind of gay. Maybe they were like that, I don't know. And the tribes of Israel sent men throughout, through all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, what wickedness is this that is done among you? Now therefore deliver us the men, the children of Belial, which are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and put away evil from Israel. But the children of Benjamin would not hearken to the voice of their brethren before the children of Israel. But the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together out of the cities unto Gibeah, and to go out to battle against the children of Israel. And the children of Benjamin were numbered at that time out of the cities 26,000 men that drew sword, beside the inhabitants of Gibeah were numbered 700 chosen men. Among all this people, there were 700 chosen men left-handed. Everyone could sling stones at an hair breadth and not miss. Well, that's got to be a little bit of an exaggeration, because why would I don't think you even need that kind of accuracy with a stone. I mean, a hair breadth. Say within an inch or two, but a stone is much bigger than a hair. There's no target you're gonna try to hit that's like, ooh, you were off by literally a hair. Like I think there's when you're throwing rocks, there's a bit of a anyway. Nitpicky. Just next time you write a book. No, I understand. It's just figure of speech. And the men of Israel beside Benjamin were numbered 400,000 men that drew sword. All these were men of war. But it bothers me because they're setting up this like the 300 type of situation. Actually, they're not, because they vastly outnumber these people. But they're setting up this battle to be like the odds were against the Israelites. You know, they got all these people. They could throw rocks within a hair's breadth. It's like, yeah, okay. They were pretty good at throwing rocks. Also, I know that not all of those 700, you know that there's no way every single one of them was good enough within a hair's breadth. There's no, like, it's not like they had 20,000 and then 19,300 of them were like pretty close, pretty accurate, like could probably kill a person easily. But when they set up like a hair as a target, they might have missed it. I'm like, ah, no, you're no good. You can't be on this team. You know, there's got to be a lead of the 700. Maybe the best guy could do that or something, or maybe the top two or three. There's no way they're all that good. You know, there's a couple that are like stragglers that aren't very good, but still, like, it's you're throwing rocks. You don't have to be that accurate. I'm just saying they're just. Just a little bit of hyperbole there, that's all. Sorry, I'm a little stuffed up. And the children of Israel arose and went up to the house of God. I didn't know they could do that. And asked counsel of God. And they could do this the whole time? They just go to his house. Hey, God! You know, and just describe their issue. And he's like, my sons. You know, like, they could do that? I didn't know they could do that this whole time. Which of us shall go up first to the battle against the children of Benjamin? And the Lord said, Judah. Judah shall go up first. This is awesome. So, they don't really have a prophet anymore now, But apparently now they can just go ask God a question and he just gives them a quick answer, you know. Like, oh yeah, what did Judah go up first? Whatever, I don't care. I'm God, but do I care about these petty things? But I love that they apparently can go ask God these questions, but that's the best they come up with. The minute I learned that I could go to God's house and ask him a question, there wouldn't be any, like, I would forget all about this earthly toil. Like, I wouldn't even think there would be a battle anymore. You'd be, guys, other side of the battle, you know? Guys, God is over there. We can go talk to God. Do you want to just, like, ask him why we're here, you know, how it came to be, you know, about space, about just anything? You want to just go ask him stuff? We just ask him stuff for hours. But no, this is a real, you know, they're talking about all-powerful God because they go and say, hey, God, which one of these meaningless tribes on this meaningless planet in this meaningless battle that's not even like, that's not even justified, which tribe should go first? And the Lord's like, that's a very important question. I'm going to answer that. I'll say Judah. Like, I love how God has some, does he have some reasoning behind that? Or, yeah, anyway, it's just, whole thing is just ridiculous. And the children of Israel rose up in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin. And the men of Israel put themselves in array to fight against them at Gibeah. And the children of Benjamin came forth out of Gibeah and destroyed down to the ground of the Israelites that day 22,000 men. And the people, the men of Israel encouraged themselves and set their battle again in array in the place where they put themselves the first day. So the Israelites were basically slaughtered the first day. And then they send, like, the next day they send him up. And the children of Israel went up that and wept before the Lord until even, and asked the counsel of the Lord, saying, shall I go up again to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother? And the Lord said, yeah, go up against him. So they're asking him again, and the Lord's like, yeah, you know, go do it. Maybe the Lord is just totally messing with them this time. Like, they have an impenetrable fortress on the top of a hill, and the Israelites come and, oh, Lord, we got massacred. You told us to go up. What do we do? Just, you know, pick yourselves up by your bootstraps. Go try again, you know. If at first you don't succeed. And the children of Israel came near against the children of Benjamin the second day, and Benjamin went forth against them out of Gibeah the second day and destroyed down to the ground of the children of Israel again 18,000 men. All these drew the sword. Well, there's your problem right there. 18,000 men all trying to draw one sword. That's not really, that's not going to work exactly. Then all the children of Israel and all the people went up and came into the house of God and wept and sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until even and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And the children of Israel inquired of the Lord, for the Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother, or shall I cease? And the Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into thine hand. First of all, my response would have been like, well, what the hell, God? Why didn't you just tell us that in the first place? So you're going to give them to us tomorrow? Well, we could have just hung out here for a few days and played Nintendo or something, and then until you were ready to deliver them into our hands. Did you really need to kill 40,000 of us? Come on, we would have waited. And then the other part of me maybe would have been like, fool me once, God, shame on you. Fool me twice, fool me for a third time. And Israel set liars in wait around Gibeah. This is usually how the battles went back then. Sorry about this creaky chair. It's distracting me. I don't know if you can hear that in the mix. Went around about Gibeah. And the children of Israel went up against Gibeah as at other times. And the children of Benjamin went out against the people and were drawn away from the city. And they began to smite of the people and kill as at other times in the highways of which one goeth up to the house of God and the other to Gibeah in the field, about 30 men of Israel. So the Israelites just gave up 30 men. We're like, yeah, you guys are going to die, but whatever, we got a plan. And the children of Benjamin said, they are smitten down before us, at the first. But the children of Israel said, let us flee and draw them from the city unto the highways. And the men of Israel rose up out of their place and put themselves in array at Baal Tamar. Baal Tamar. That's funny. Baal Tamar. And the liers in wait of Israel came forth out of their places, even out of the meadows of Gibeah. And there came against Gibeah 10,000 chosen men out of all Israel, and the battle was sore, but they knew not that evil was near them. And the Lord smote Benjamin before Israel, and the children of Israel destroyed of the Benjamites that day 25,000 and 100 men. All these drew the sword. So, sorry guys, I'm going to have to be a bit of a spoil sport here. Sorry to be so skeptical. But it sounds like it's possible that improved battle tactics were more to credit for the victory than God just coincidentally deciding to give it to you on that day. You know, I think maybe a more accurate description would be like, well, talking to God probably did nothing, but we had a better plan this day and we won with this better plan. You know, you need to isolate your variables here. You can't change a bunch of things all at once and then decide which variable affected, you know, just. So the children of Benjamin saw that they were smitten. They were smitten. For the men of Israel gave place to the Benjamites. Benjamites, yes. Because they trusted unto the liers in wait, which they had set beside Gibeah. And the liars in wait hasted and rushed upon Gibeah, and the liars in wait. So it's just describing this again. It already said what happened, but it's just going through the play. This is the instant replay. This was instant replay back in that day. You describe that they won, so you're like, oh, and the Israelites won, and then you say, let's look at the instant replay. And by instant replay, we mean wait a couple hundred years or whenever somebody writes this, and then describe it in slightly more detail. And the liars of wait waited, and, you know, they killed everybody. And now there was an appointed sign between the men of Israel and the liars in wait. Yeah, this is good. This is like the Madden play-by-play. Now, here there is an appointed sign between the men. I can't do Madden, but it's more. I sort of jumped like 10% of the way between my voice and Madden's voice. Now, there's an appointed sign between the men of Israel and the liars in wait that they should make a great flame and smoke up and rise out of the city. And, you know, Madden's, like, breaking it down on the film, you know. They, like, see, here was the sign they made between the people who were hiding and the other people. And right there, stop it right there. And he's, like, drawing around. So you get some Israelites here, X's and O's here. And then you get your Benjamites over there, and there's people hiding behind the Benjamites. And that's the quarterback signaled the Benjamites behind. Anyway. And when the men of Israel retired in battle, Benjamin began to smite and kill all of the men of Israel, about 30 persons, for they said, surely they are smitten down before us, as in the first battle. But when the flame began to arise up out of the city with a pillar of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and behold, the flame of the city ascended up to heaven. And when the men of Israel turned again, the men of Benjamin were amazed, for they saw that evil was come upon them. Therefore they turned their backs before the men of Israel unto the way of the wilderness. But the battle overtook them, and them which came out of the cities they destroyed in the midst of them. Thus they enclosed the Benjamites round about, and chased them, and trode them down with ease over against Gibeah toward the sun rising, and there fell of Benjamin 18,000 men. All these were men of valor. And they turned and fled toward the wilderness, unto the rock of Rimmon. I'm not stopping because none of this is interesting. It's just redescribing the battle, and then, like, everybody ran away or something. So that all which fell that day in Benjamin were 25,000 men that drew the sword. All these were men of valor. But 600 men turned and fled into the wilderness under the rock Rimmon, and abode in the rock Rimmon 4 months. And the men of Israel turned again upon the children of Benjamin and smote them with the edge of the sword, as well the men of every city as the beast, and all that came to hand, all they set on fires, all the cities that they came to. As usual, once you win a battle, you're allowed to just do whatever you want. Kill everybody, burn everything. That's just what you do. Oh, this chapter is boring. This is the last chapter of Judges, and it goes out with a whimper. Now, the men of Israel had sworn in Mizpah, saying, there shall not any of us give his daughter unto Benjamin to wife. Okay, so this was really weird to try to follow, but I think I got it. it just what I read right there just happened. They, the men of Israel who, you know, the men of Benjamin were the bad people, supposedly, if you believe what this book says. And they, the Israelites decide, like, we're not giving any women to the Benjamites so that they just die off, I guess. And the people came to the house of God and abode there till even before God, and lifted up their voices and wept sore and said, O Lord God of Israel, why is this come to pass in Israel that there should be today one tribe lacking in Israel? But it came to pass on the morrow that the people rose early and built there an altar and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So it is so weird. I think, to the best of what I've figured out from reading, I had to read a bunch of different explanations of this. It's like they accidentally, it's like they got too emotional when they swore that they wouldn't give any women to this tribe. And then the next verse, they're like, oh, you know what? Why should it be that that tribe will die out now? Shit. And we swore it the other day, so we have to stick to it. Man, what are we going to do? Like, that's the next line. It's the weirdest thing. And the children of Israel said, who is there among all the tribes of Israel that came not up with the congregation unto the Lord? For they had made a great oath concerning him that came not up to the Lord to Mizpeh, saying, he shall surely be put to death. And the children of Israel repented them for Benjamin their brother, and said, there's one tribe cut off from Israel this day. How shall we do for wives for them that remain, seeing we have sworn by the Lord that we will not give them our daughters to wife? It's, that is so weird. I can't even understand this mentality that you get. So two verses ago, you swore you wouldn't give your daughters, and then you feel sorry for the tribe. You're like, oh man, what's going to happen to them? We better find them some wives, but not our daughters, because we swore that. It's weird. And they said, what? Did I already read that? I think it's repeating. And they said, what one is there of the tribes of Israel that came not up to Mizpeh to the Lord? And behold, there came none to the camp from Jabesh Gilead to the assembly. For the people were numbered, and behold, there were none of the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead there. And the congregation sent thither 12,000 men of the valiantest, and commanded them, saying, go and smite the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead, with the edge of the sword, and with the women and the children. Yeah, so just kill everybody, obviously. This is the thing that ye shall do. Ye shall utterly destroy every male and every woman that hath lain by man. And they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead 400 young virgins that had known no man by lying with any male. And they brought them unto the camp to Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. And the whole congregation sent some to speak to the children of Benjamin that were in the rock Rimmon, and to call peaceably unto them. And Benjamin came again at that time, and they gave them wives, which they had saved alive of the women of Jabesh Gilead, and yet so it sufficed them not. And the people repented them for Benjamin, because the Lord that had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. So, I got it. Hold on a sec. I will be right back. All right, I know no time has elapsed for you, but I'm back. I was feeling a little congested, and I didn't think it would be good podcasting to go like, hold on a second, then go, bah! like make disgusting snot noises all over the mic, just everywhere. I didn't think that would be, maybe that was the wrong decision. Maybe that would have been good podcasting. I don't know, but I made the decision, and I have to stick with it. I also have a strict no editing policy. I was talking about that with the cognitive dissonance fellas. I never edit anything. I just record and go, and it's done. Occasionally I stop the recording and restart it, as I just did. What the hell was I talking about? You would know better than I, because less time has elapsed for you. This is just astronomically stupid. And like I said, you get the benefit of me having to figure this out for a freaking hour. Because I think what happens is I sort of know what I'm reading, but it's so dumb that I'm like, my brain rejects and says like, no, you have this wrong. That can't be that can't be what's happening. But no, this is actually what's happening. I've confirmed it. They make this oath saying like, ugh, screw you guys. We solemnly swear right now and with no take backsies that we will never give you daughters to wife. And then 2 minutes pass by and they're like, shit, why they're not going to have any wives? They're like genuinely concerned. One verse later. And then, so then they're like, so their solution is, I don't know if you followed this, but they pick another tribe that didn't go with them to battle or something. And they're like, well, you know, we also made an oath that this tribe, if, or any tribe that didn't go with us to battle, we'd kill. And so they do. They go massacre a tribe and take all the virgins. And they're like, hey, you know what? We got one tribe with no wives and another tribe we just massacred a bunch of virgins. Huh. And then they reinvented, well, not reinvented, they invented Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and put the two together. And but then they find that they're short on wives. They're short by a couple hundred. And they actually say this. They actually say this. They say, the people repented because that the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. So they blame God. They're like, oh, we're short 200 virgins. God, why did you do this to us? What are you? This is the weirdest. I don't understand. And these are the people that supposedly you trust enough that they were telling the truth, or not even telling the truth, that they were correct about their perception of reality, you know, that you're going to believe in the God they believed in. You think God was talking to these people? Really? Amazing. Amazing. So then they said, behold, there's a feast of the Lord in Shiloh yearly in a place which is on the north side of Bethel, on the east side of the highway that goeth up from Bethel to Shechem, and on the south of Lebanon. Therefore, they commanded the children of Benjamin, saying, go and lie in wait in the vineyards, and see, and behold, if the daughters of Shiloh come out to dance in dances, then come ye out of the vineyards, and catch you every man his wife of the daughters of Shiloh, and go to the land of Benjamin. And it, so this is their solution. They're like, ah, got it. They're brainstorming. Where do we find wives? And one, there must be one guy that's like, hey guys, we could just take back our oath that we swore 2 minutes ago about not giving him, you know, our daughters. Like, I'm sure God understands that we made a mistake. You know, we're blaming God for this, right? Well, God, I'm sure rather than have us blame him, I'm sure he'd let us take it back. Don't you think? They're like, no, that's who invited that? That's stupid. Get out of here. Get out of the council. You're out. And then the next guy's idea was, you know what? I got it. There's another people. I don't know if it's another tribe. I think I'm not going to look it up at this point. And they have a festival, and that sometimes daughters of their tribe go and dance. Let's go, all you creepy Benjamites, go and hide in the vineyards, and then when the daughters come out, then just take them. I guess it doesn't say whether they have the father's consent or what, but that's their plan. Yeah, just take them. They're out there. Nobody's looking at them. They're not, you know. If somebody left them out there, that means they don't want them. So just go out and find a wife. And it shall be that when their fathers or their brethren... Oh, sorry, I could have read ahead. When their fathers or their brethren come unto us to complain, that we will say unto them, be favorable unto them for our sakes, because we have reserved not to each man his wife in the war, for ye did not give unto them at this time that ye shall be guilty. And they will be so confused by that they will stop arguing with you. They will have no idea what you're talking about, and they'll just say, whatever. You know what? Fine. Just keep her. And the children of Benjamin did so, and took them wives according to their number of them that danced, whom they caught. And they went and returned unto their inheritance, and repaired the cities, and dwelt in them. And the children of Israel departed thence at that time, every man to his tribe and to his family. And they went out from thence, every man to his inheritance. In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. The end. That's the end of Judges. So what a weird, just obscure way to end it. You know, I think I've beaten this dead horse more to death. So we will go on to Ruth. The Book of Ruth. Now, Ruth chapter 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn. I'm warning you, this is boring. Nothing happens. This is really boring. And, okay, what was I saying? To went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Don't worry about their names. They die. Oh, sorry. Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. I told you. I warned you guys. I warned you guys. Don't waste your brain power on remembering their names. And she was left and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelled there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died also. See, the other guy died too. And the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, and that she might return from the country of Moab. For she heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people, giving them bread. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her daughters-in-law, Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you, as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that ye may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, Surely we will return with thee unto thy people. And Naomi said, Turn again, my daughters. Why will ye go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have an husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have an husband also tonight and should bear sons, would ye tarry for them till they were grown? It's so ridiculous. Would ye stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the Lord, the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. So, okay, so what's happening here, and all that, well, screw that. I'll just read the rest of it. Doesn't matter. And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth, all of a sudden I say F instead of TH, and Ruth clave unto her. And she said, Behold, sister-in-law has gone back to her people, unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee, for whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God be my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried, and the Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So the two went until they came to Bethlehem. Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, and all the city was moved about them, and they said, Is this Naomi? And she, apparently they all know her. And she said unto them, Call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then ye call me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? Unfortunately, that kind of makes sense, half instead of half, so the joke is failing. But Ruth, on the other hand. So Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem, Judah, in the beginning of the barley harvest. Okay, so here's what happened. Here's what didn't happen. Naomi had two sons and a husband, and they married two Moabites, and the sons died, and her husband died. One of the wives, named Ruth I'm doing it again now. I'm all screwed up. I'm not even meaning to. One of the wives, she said, once the husbands died, she said to her daughters-in-law, Hey, look, just we're good. You know, I figure we're even, you know, your husband's died. Just peace out and whatever. Have a good life. I'm going to go back to my home country because they're in a foreign country. And the one's like, yeah, no, you're right. I'm out. And then, but one of them named Roof, was like, no, I love you. I want to stay with you for some reason. I don't really know why. It's not unreasonable, I guess. Maybe if she was really young or naive and just had grown attached to the woman, whatever. So she decided to go back. And that's all that has happened. That is the entirety of that chapter. All that reading I did was for that. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth. Of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. That's a Boaz name. And Ruth, Ruth the Moabitess, said unto Naomi, let me go now to the field and glean ears of corn after him, in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said, I guess to get food, they're going to go just pick up extra corn. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was a Boaz. That guy was a Boaz farmer, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. And then Boaz said unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. Everybody knows that. And I think I'm worried here. I don't know. I think I maybe see where this is going. It's possible that she's going to bone her dead husband's father's brother. Because that's who we're dealing with. Dead husband's father's brother. I don't know. I actually don't know. But is that where this is going? I don't know. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now that she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged young men that they shall not touch thee? Well, how would she know that? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink that of which the young men have drawn. Then she fell on her face, and he laughed, and bowed herself to the ground, and said unto him, why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered, because he's a Boaz, and said unto her, it hath fully been shewed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. And the Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord of God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not unlike one of thine handmaidens. And Boaz said unto her, at mealtime, I'm naming a kid Boaz. That name is awesome. Boaz. If your name is Boaz, is anyone messing with you ever? There's no way. There's no way. Don't even if you're the scrawniest guy. First of all, don't even show yourself if someone wants to fight you. Just be in the shadows and say, like, look, my name's Boaz. Now, I could come out of these shadows and we could fight, or you could take this information and use it to decide what would be best for you. I said Boaz, by the way. My name's Boaz. So just use that information, come to a decision, and then let me know. I'll be here. I'm ready. My name's Boaz. I'm ready to fight you. But let me know. You would never, no one is messing with someone named Boaz. And eat of the bread, and dip thy morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and it was sufficed, and was sufficed, and left. When she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young man, saying, let her glean. And when Boaz commands his young man, they listen. Let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not. And let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. So she gleaned in the field. It's almost over, don't worry. So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley, and she took it up and went in the city, and her mother-in-law saw that what she had gleaned, and she brought forth, and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. And the mother-in-law said unto her, "Where hast thou gleaned today?" And where? She said, "I smell a Boaz on this, that you've gleaned. And where wrottest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee." And she shewed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, "The man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz." And Naomi said, "I knew it. I knew this wheat smelled like Boaz, that magnificent man." And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead." And Naomi said unto her, "The man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen." And Ruth the Moabitess said, "He said unto me also, Thou shalt keep fast by my young man until they have ended all my harvest." And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field." So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. And that's the end. So all that happened, in case you didn't understand all that gleaning and Boazing, Ruth, the girl who came back with a mother, went out to glean, which is to pick up the leftover stuff of the field, which I think they were required by law to leave for, which was kind of a nice law, actually. I mean, what if the farmer's starving? And then you feel bad for the farmer. But it's a gentle, it's a kind law. Let me put it this way. It's the best law I've ever heard of in this book. Even though I didn't hear it in this book, I read it in the comments. But anyway, so she goes to do that, but she just so happens to go on the farm of Boaz, who is her, like I said, her dead husband's father's brother. Boaz treats her kindly and says, and has the men like leave stuff for her to pick up. Like, "Oh, whoops, dropped this full ear of corn. Oh, sure hope someone doesn't glean that." And then she, of course, comes and gleans it, and she has a ton of food. And that's it. That's all that happened. So it's a sweet little chapter so far, sweet little book. Nothing bad has happened. It's kind of gentle, but I mean, it's boring. Nothing's happened. But no news is good news, I guess, unless you're trying to, I don't know, make an entertaining podcast, say. But if you're just reading the Bible, then it wasn't bad. All right, I'll see you guys next episode. Adios.